evening, everyone. I'm Lynn Ormoudou. Welcome to Health Chat. Get this, globally, in 2016, the number of overweight children under the age of 5 was estimated to be over 41 million. That's a lot of children being overweight. And overweight and obese children are likely to stay obese into adulthood and more likely to develop non-communicable diseases like diabetes and cardiovascular diseases at a younger age. That's according to the World Health Organization. Overweight and obesity, as well as their related diseases, are largely preventable. Health experts say good nutrition is one way to prevent early onset of obesity in children and other related diseases, as well as exercise. Exercise is also another way that experts recommend people prevent or address obesity. So today we'll discuss nutrition, exercise, and getting kids healthy. And our special guest is author and publisher Diane Warren. Diane joins us via phone from Sarasota, Florida. Diane, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here.
It's good to have you on the program. Listen, let's get right into it. I read about you, I talked to you before, and I found out that you've had this interest with children and getting kids healthy and nutrition, and also involving parents to really maintain a good health for the children. So first and foremost, let me ask you this. Why did you decide to focus on children's health so early on? I think it was in the 70s, when you were not even in the field of nutrition, if you will.
Well, I had an interest in nutrition, and I was teaching school, and I was looking at the school lunches, which were very heavy meals, rich in government surplus foods, and I saw that what the kids were bringing to lunch in their bags, and it was pretty upsetting to see all this prefab food that was circulating in their bodies. And you were mentioning all those facts and figures from WHO. They also say that now 50% of the world is overweight.
Yes.
Over 50%. And WHO calls that globesity.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is now a worldwide problem. And it's the first time that more people are dying from lifestyle choices than from any other cause.
And I guess my point, my concern really is this global epidemic, obesity epidemic, globesity, as the WHO call it, you say, woo. Why is it in a high number? Why is it increasing over the years when it seems like there is more and more awareness about living healthy, about making the right choices in terms of nutrition, about exercising? But to your opinion, why is it, why are the numbers increasing?
You know, that is really baffling, because we have so much information available to us now, and we have such a wide variety of fresh fruits and vegetables available to us now. And I think it cops out to convenience, that more and more people, there are no more mothers, are out working outside of the home, and there's just not, they perceive that there's not enough time to prepare meals. And so people are eating in family-style restaurants and fast food restaurants. In fact, over 50% of meals are consumed there. Mm-hmm. And all of these foods are high in sugars, fats, and salts, and low in nutrition.
Yes.
So they could be overfed but undernourished.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a very, very good point, because when you cook at home, you have more control.
Exactly.
Over what you're cooking and what you put in your food. The WHO also mentioned the fact that the global obesity problem, obesity is increasing in developing countries.
Mm-hmm.
And the African region is one region where the problem is increasing. And this is a region where people tend to cook themselves. They tend to cook a lot. So I guess it's something that it's really I question a lot in terms of what the cause is, even in the developing world, where you see people cooking. When you go to Southeast Asia, people cook a lot. When you go to Africa, as I mentioned. So is there more to it than the eating out?
Well, the lack of movement, I think, is huge. Now, with all the technology we have, people move less. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, even if you look at even preparing meals, you look at how much energy is expended in the kitchen. Yeah. You know, the opening the can opener, the chopping, the lifting, the squatting, that you're getting exercise while you're preparing your meals. And we're just losing all these opportunities to move.
That's right. That's right. It's a good point there. And listen, I was able to get a hand on some of your books. You've written so many interesting books for children, and they are focusing on good nutrition, exercising, and I find them so informative, but also entertaining, and I'm an adult. And I really...
Oh, that's encouraging. Well, that was my goal when I first started doing all this, was to create activities where parents and children shared an exercise around nutrition, where they were both educated and they were both entertained. I wanted to get the health message out there without beating them over the head with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and let's talk about, for example, one of the books, which is Family Meals.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I see that it's bilingual, English, Spanish, and why is that?
Well, because we were working with organizations that were dealing with at-risk families, a lot of which were Spanish-speaking. Mm-hmm. And so this way we wanted to not only reach them with the information, but also give them the opportunity to learn English and to, get involved in local community practices and procedures and activities.
Okay. And when I look at the book, you have... you have in each page, you have parents' corner.
Mm-hmm.
You have a message for the child, but then you have parents' corner. Why was it important to include both? Because when I look at many children's books, it's for the kids and it speaks to the kids and that's it. But here you include the parents as well.
Well, because teaching healthy habits starts in the home. It's in the parents' hands, and we have to give them all of the support we can to make sure that they're raising healthy kids.
Mm-hmm.
When, you know, the whole nation, the whole world suffers if our kids do not grow up healthy. Right now there's an organization here in the States called Mission Readiness, and it's like 350 retired military brass from all different disciplines, and they go out, and they become like a lobbying group to encourage Congress people to make sure that our healthy school lunches stay intact and that we can provide quality early childhood education, because 70% of all the people who try to enlist are turned down due to obesity and health issues, mm-hmm. Scholastic underachievement, or previous felonies. And all of this can be mitigated by quality early childhood and feeding our kids right.
Yes. And this is so important when you talk about the schools. Because even if you are a parent who feed your child in a way that is considered healthy, and the child goes to school and he goes to the cafeteria, the choices that are there are not the best in many cases. That's what prompted you actually to start all this literature and your work. So what are what advice would you give to parents in a case like this where they can do something at home but they are powerless in school?
Well, they can go to the school and express their concerns, number one. And school lunches, thank God for Michelle Obama and the efforts that she put into them, have definitely improved. But now we're backsliding. They're allowing higher concentrations of salt and more non-whole grain foods to be available, not as many fruits and vegetables, because older kids were throwing the meals out. Well, you know, they were getting a little pissy because they weren't getting their pizzas and stuff anymore. And this was anticipated, you know, but the young kids who start with the program at an early age, this is normal, and they will do nothing but benefit from year after year after year of healthy meals.
Now, you mentioned something that is very important, the kids' reaction, because if you change their diet, the recipe, and the meal, the menu, if the kids do not like the food, what do you do? Because, you know, if they want pizza instead of a good salad or soup, you know. Because sometimes you have to look at it from the kids' perspective. How do we bring kids to make the right choices in food?
Well, see, that gets back to my original point, is that we have to get these kids young before the bad habits are established. It's much easier to prevent them than to try and change them.
Mm.
So, you know, we have to look at these kids that are, you know, in the upper grades, that are more used to having their familiar fast foods, and we have to maybe do a more gradual weaning, where we take away the negative and add more positive to each plate, maybe not do it all in one fell swoop.
Yes, yes. So let's think about a parent who is dealing with a child who doesn't want healthy food. You said to start early, but if, for example, the kids is 9 and they want to change the child's habit, but they are 9, they already have established a diet, they have their own preference in terms of their diet, what would you advise that parent?
That it's a whole family affair. The whole family changes their diet. So nobody feels singled out, and everybody, this is a new adventure for the family to go on to improve their health. That the parents have to be able to convey to the kids the importance of self-care, you know, and of having healthy habits that will last us through our whole lives.
Okay.
We got now 60% of people over 60 in the United States are on a prescription drug.
Hmm.
And that is a result of, I think, a lifetime of unhealthy habits, of bad choices.
Yes, yes. So let's look at one healthy habit. If you are to, I know in your books you have so many different tips and information and everything. Share with us something basic, something simple that parents can do every day just to bring some change, some positive change in the child's diet.
Well, you can have healthy foods, make them very accessible and easy to eat. So have clean, fresh fruit, you know, chopped up or whatever, on a easily reached shelf in the refrigerator. You got to make it easy for them to be healthy. And, you know, and eliminate junk food. Don't have it in the house, so the temptation is not there.
Mm.
And let model eating healthy. Show them how much you enjoy that apple or banana or guava. And set the example.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. So if there is no junk food in the house, the child obviously will not be tempted. One way is to eliminate junk food and make it reachable in the refrigerator. Now, what kind of snacks would you suggest? Because sometimes they have that sugar rush. They want something sweet. What would you do in exchange of maybe an ice cream?
Well, give them an apple. Apples are very sweet. My kids loved growing up. They would eat string cheese in an apple. So they had that stick-to-the-ribs feel plus the sweet of the apple. Plus it gave them something to do. You know, it gave them a little activity while they were eating, stringing their cheese. And but we just always had healthy options. And we made them very available, and we made them very easy to get. And our kids, you know, basically they grew up with only the healthy stuff. So it was a little bit, you know, they had a little bit of an advantage there, I would say, in not having to deal with unhealthy habits later down the road.
Okay. All right. That sounds good. So we have to take a short break and we will continue our discussion. When we come back, I'd like to talk a bit about fitness, because that's something you also address. So we'll talk about fitness and we will continue our discussion with Diane Warren when we return on kids and health. So don't go away. We'll be right back. But first, the news with Bonsa Tufa.
Thank you, Lenore. A new report in The Lancet finds that the world needs to find solutions quickly to fight obesity, starvation, and climate change. A group of 40 experts from over a dozen countries say that the way in which food is currently produced, distributed, and consumed not only fuels the hunger and obesity pandemics, but it also generates almost 30% of greenhouse gas emissions. The experts state that governments must curb the political influence of major corporations in order to defeat the pandemics. The report's other recommendations include reducing government subsidies for beef, dairy, sugar, corn, rice, and wheat, while redirecting that money to sustainable farming for healthier foods. Women with inflammatory bowel disease, or IBD, can have healthy pregnancies with proper planning and care. That is according to a new initiative from a major medical society aimed at dispelling myths surrounding the disease. The IBD Parenthood Project from the American Gastroenterological Association educates women with IBD about how to manage their condition in order to avert risks while conceiving or carrying a child and giving birth. Ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease, two forms of IBD, usually involve severe diarrhea, abdominal pain, fatigue, and weight loss. IBD affects more than 10 million people worldwide and can even be life-threatening. A clinical care pathway developed by the IBD Parenthood Project and published in the journal Gastroenterology provides doctors with information for treating IBD pregnancies. And that's a wrap-up of your latest health news.
Welcome back. For those of you joining us late, tonight we are discussing getting kids healthy with author and publisher Diane Warren. So Diane, one of the books that you published is Born to Move, Hop a Lot's First Steps to Fitness. What would you say are some of the movement that a toddler can do in terms of fitness? Is there such a thing as a fitness for toddler?
Well, it's just being active.
Okay.
Kids need to be active at least an hour a day of unstructured play so that they are learning about their bodies, they're refining their motor skills, they're building the skills they need for later development. And this, too, is a family affair. You know, the kids have to see their parents active. They have to see that their parents value the movement and remaining active. Take a walk after dinner with the family. Walk the dog as a family affair. Plan activities for the weekend where everybody participates. Mm-hmm. That's one of the big things with a lot of the sporting events and the sporting things in the U.S. is that a lot of kids are just spectators.
Yes.
And not actively involved. The fact that we have so few schools in the U.S. that mandate daily physical education. That, to me, is one of the worst things that's happening to kids in the public school system, because getting out there and blowing off steam helps you concentrate and focus. It helps kids with ADHD. There are so many benefits. I just saw a thing the other day on movement and the elderly, and the more you move, the more you put off dementia.
Mm-hmm.
So there are so many benefits to movement.
Yes, yes. And I want to go over some of what's written in the book, because it's so interesting. You have different stages of the child's growth in terms of what movement they can do. For example, here you have, I was born to move. It builds my body and my brain. I learn about myself, my world, with each new skill I gain. And then in Parents' Corner, you say, play with your child, teach him how to move by moving with him. Physical activity shared by all builds family. It's really what you were saying. And then you go to, okay, toddler, 12 to 36 months. And so 3 to 5 years, for example, for preschoolers, need at least 1 hour each day of guided activity and as much free play time as possible.
Right.
Yeah. So what could be those guided activity?
Well, they could be teaching them how to catch, how to throw, how to balance, teach them a sport, you know, like a little kid's game, the not volleyball, but like dodgeball.
And, soccer and some.
Yeah,
some,
exactly.
Yeah, things like that.
You know, that there are so many opportunities to move. I mean, even if you're just seeing how many times you can sit down and stand up out of your chair in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are lots of opportunities to create games around movement.
Yes, yes. And I think one of the challenges now, I know that technology is wonderful. I am not against technology, but I think it has also brought along a little bit of distraction and to some extent laziness, because you see children and parents, everybody is busy with their tablet, their cell phone, they're on the screen, TV, watching or playing some games. So how do we go around this? This is because technology is here to stay.
Exactly. Well, again, I think it's another one of the parents' responsibilities to set up guidelines. You know, there'll be no cell phones in your bedroom. There'll be no cell phones at the dinner table. There'll be no cell phones during homework. You know, there are lots of opportunities for parents to control. There's all the applications you can get, you know, to control what avenues the kids pursue with their devices. And parents have to take an active role in that.
Mm-hmm. So when we let's talk about some recipes that maybe you can suggest, quick to fix meals, because some people just don't know how to cook. I'm sorry to say that.
Mm-hmm.
Some people don't know. You have a book about vegetable soup that I'm looking at, where you have yams, yellow squash, watercress, so many interesting spinach, onion, so many interesting ingredients. So let me put you to the task, if you will, to give us a quick recipe for maybe dinner, a quick dinner recipe.
Well, let's see. One of our quick go-tos was black beans and rice with a poached egg on top.
Mm-hmm.
And then we would put onions and tomatoes and avocado on top of that. So we're getting a little bit of our greens and our veggies, but a high-protein meal. We do a lot of soups.
Mm-hmm.
And soups, you know, are anything that's left over in the refrigerator, basically.
Okay.
And, you know, cooked to your family's taste preferences. We do lots of sandwiches, lots of quesadillas. You know, you can get, I even saw sprouted whole wheat tortillas the other day in the store when I bought them, and they are delicious.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do avocado quesadillas. You know, it's like a Mexican grilled cheese sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
We do scrambled eggs, and we can do scrambled egg burritos. Those are always very tasty when you get your beans and your eggs and your veggies in whole wheat tortillas or corn tortillas.
Yeah.
We can, let's see.
What about for breakfast to start the day? A way that, because someone can tend to go to the muffins and go to the, you know,
mm-hmm.
all that delicious heavy ham and cheese and all
right,
this good
right.
stuff.
Well, you know, I used to feed my kids when it was cold mornings. We would do grilled peanut butter and jelly and banana sandwiches on whole wheat.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, those are delicious.
That's interesting. I've never tried that.
Oh, it's delicious. And they're warm and they're filling. It's protein.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the scrambled eggs. Another good thing to keep in the refrigerator for kids are hard-boiled eggs, so that they can grab a hard-boiled egg for a snack or for breakfast or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
We do cereals, but make sure you're not looking at the cereals that are eye level for the kids in the markets, because that's where all of the high sugar content ones are.
Yes.
But do the whole grain cereals and put your bananas and your milks and your other fruits on those. Oatmeal is a great way to start the day.
Mm-hmm.
With blueberries and bananas and your milk. Breakfast is really an easy one to do, I think.
Yes, yes. It's when we talk about lunch and dinner that trouble starts.
Then we have more challenges.
That's where all the trouble starts. So.
You know, what I found very interesting was that, you know, the Mediterranean diet is touted as being the model for the world to eat.
Mm-hmm.
I just saw this headline the other day that said, region known for healthy diet, now known for overweight kids.
Okay.
And kids who live in the Mediterranean region are among the most overweight children in the world.
Did they say what changed?
Fast food.
Oh, yeah. And yes, expert of when I spoke to some experts and observers, they say the same thing. That's one of the reasons, even in the Africa region, which was known to be very healthy in terms of diet, fast food has been creating a problem.
Exactly. Yeah. Wherever it goes, obesity tracks.
Yeah.
And, you know, why governments can't get more of a handle on that when I think it's such a risk to national security.
But, you know, you talked about convenience, and I think there's this thing where people just want to save time and go about doing whatever they think is more important.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where, again, we have to get back to convincing these parents of the importance of giving their kids the skills to lead a healthy life.
Yes, yes, yes.
And, you know, I mean, if you look in your own families and neighborhoods and you look at all of the elderly people in your environment and what they suffer from,
mm-hmm.
and that people are getting these maladies at earlier and earlier ages.
Yes.
And so this is not tracking in the right direction. Right now, lifespans in developing nations are decreasing, and children aren't expected to outlive their parents. And I find how can we justify this?
Yes, how can we justify this? It's really, we have to sound the alarm on this. So then let's talk about messaging, because you have written several books which you are sharing some messages with children and parents. So when it comes to messaging, what can we tell children to the level that they will really understand that eating healthy is important? What kind of message do you share with children? I know with parents it's easier because, you know, you can speak at their level. But with children, what do you say to them?
I just tell them what they're... Well, I have a young 2-year-old grandson, and the other day his mother was eating a banana, and he said to her, "Mama, bananas have potassium."
Okay.
2 years old. And, you know, she just about her eyes popped out, and she said, "Really?" And at his daycare, one of the teachers there, when they were talking about food, when they're giving out food, they explain what the food is and what it does and create that association between what you eat and how you feel.
Oh, yeah. That's good because it touches on the emotion, and mm-hmm. that's really a good way to talk to them.
Right. And, you know, kids catch on so much faster and understand so much more than we think they do.
Yes.
And we underestimate them. And we've got to talk to their higher self, you know, and tell them the dreams we have for them to be so healthy. And this is the way you get there.
Okay. All right. Well, Diane, before we wrap, because we almost at the end of the show, how can people find more information about what you do, the resources that you share?
They can go to the website.
Okay.
And that's www.fitnessforkids, FITNESS4KIDZ.com.
Okay.
Or you can email me at Diane, DIANNE, @fitnessforkids.com.
Diane Warren, thank you so much for joining us today. It was a pleasure to have you.
Thank you for giving me this platform.
Absolutely. And that was author and publisher Diane Warren. We thank her for joining us. That's all the time we have for today's Health Chat. I'm your host, Linor Mudu, in Washington, with producer Dan Bonsatufa and Dan, our engineer Dan. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
This is VOA News.